It's the Opperman Report. And now, here is investigator Ed Opperman.
Okay, welcome to the Opperman Report. I'm your host, private investigator Ed Opperman. You can find me at Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting through my website, emailrevealer.com, or you can just get a hold of me at oppermaninvestigations@gmail.com. If you like our show, be sure and check out our Patreon, the Opperman Report Patreon. We're going to kind of be holding back shows like 30 days coming up here. So if you want to get the shows as soon as we record them, before everybody hears them on AMFM and on the podcast on Friday nights, you want to join Patreon, Opperman Report Patreon. Of course, our archives are free. Go to Spreaker.com. I do a live show there every Friday night. There's a chat room. You get an email notification anytime we put up new content. And if you go to Spreaker.com and you search the archives, you'll find our guest today, NT Lawyer, one of our favorite guests. Everybody loves this guy, NT Lawyer. He's got the website Crazy Days and Nights, but even better than that, you go to his Patreon, which is NT Lawyer, E-N-T-Y Lawyer, L-A-W-Y-E-R, because he's an entertainment lawyer in Hollywood and has all the inside gossip. Mr. NT Lawyer, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me on again, Ed.
No, man, thank you so much. I really enjoy it. There's a handful of guests that I'm very comfortable with and I enjoy.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So tell us, who is NT Lawyer?
You know, I'm just a guy that one day, now coming on 17 years ago, was bored at work. And I had been reading some of my friend's blog and said, you know, I could do something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just started telling some stories and things that I'd run across. And then it kind of turned into a Hollywood thing. And, you know, then I got involved in, you know, writing about like Harvey Weinstein and NXIVM and stuff like that. And then that kind of translated into writing about like MK Ultra, but at the same time keeping, you know, Hollywood gossip. And that's basically what I've been doing.
And I know you got the website, the gossip, the blind items on Crazy Days and Nights, but what's the difference between the Patreon, the NT Lawyer Patreon?
I mean, Patreon, you know, the blind items, except for maybe one a day, are generally like 3 or 4 lines long. So it's really kind of hard to talk. I used to, back in the day, I used to write articles and things like that, and it was more in-depth. And so that's kind of what I wanted to do from the podcast perspective, is to be able to talk about something for 45 minutes or an hour or multiple parts and multiple hours and just really dive into things, whether it's something, you know, gossip related, but even if it's something gossip related, it can turn into, you know, a deep discussion. You know, you could talk about Kanye West and then you could talk about things like his trainer and stuff, and then that gets you into a whole MK Ultra. And, you know, MK Ultra is really big in the news right now because in Canada they're trying to there's a class action lawsuit where they're trying to say that the US government shouldn't have immunity from lawsuits from all of these victims from, you know, Canada's past.
Yeah, I got a great interview called Psychopath Machine with this guy, Stephen Smith, who was a patient up there in Canada. And the doctor that ran the place, there was a guy who was like a mercenary who was a patient there that was allowed to go to South Africa on a mercenary mission and go back and live with the doctor at his house. It's just unbelievable, crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that Dr. Ewan Cameron guy, I don't know what, you know, and the Canadian government says, oh, we didn't really know the extent of what he was doing and stuff. But yeah, you did. And they said, well, we didn't know that the CIA was funding some of it. Yeah, you did. And just what this guy did, where he said, I can repattern everybody. And basically he took all these people and put them into a childlike state where they weren't, you know, potty trained anymore. They had to wear diapers and things like this. And these had been people that were normal, productive citizens and members of society. And many, many of them were changed forever. And that's what these lawsuits are about.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had just today I interviewed John Potash from Drugs as Weapons Against Us and the Tupac stuff. And he wrote an article for Covert Action magazine about this recent release of this Baltimore Vatican stuff. And one of the priests there has really serious MK Ultra type ties, using hypnosis and drugs on his victims and filming them and riding around in police cars. So check that out at covertactionmagazine.com. I contacted you because I heard you were doing a whole thing about Kanye West and his personal trainer that had him committed. What have you been working on?
Well, I mean, this personal trainer, his guy name is Harley Pasternak, and basically that is who Kanye West has accused of trying to institutionalize him and drug him into oblivion. And this Harley Pasternak, he's connected to psychological operations in the Canadian military and all of that. And, you know, in 2016, Kanye had a breakdown and he was hospitalized. And everybody kind of remembers that, but nobody remembers where he was when he had this breakdown, and he was at Harley Pasternak's house. And it's just this kind of, you know, okay, why is this guy there? Why? He's a personal trainer and stuff. And you think, okay, well, he's just, but he's not. I mean, he's got a master's degree in exercise and nutrition science. Okay, sounds very personal trainer-like, but he was a nutrition and exercise scientist at the Department of National Defense's Defense and Civil Institute for Environmental Medicine, which is a Canadian government department which supports the Canadian Armed Forces. And then he worked as a scientist at this defense research thing. And what did he research? Human systems integration. You know? So psychology of malicious intent is what he did. Basically PSYOPs is what he was doing. And now all of a sudden he's a personal trainer to Hollywood celebrities. You know, and it's just one of the things that Harley said was, working for the military, I wasn't governed by the same laws that the typical person was, so I could look at the impact of certain drugs that are not everyday things. That's a quote from him. So, I mean, then you take, okay, well, how are you any different than Dr. Ewan Cameron? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically the same thing. This Defense Research Board came as from, like, this Canadian Armed Forces thing, which at the same time that Ewan Cameron and his, you know, department was going on. It's the same thing. It just has a different name.
If he has all these credentials and doing this kind of research, and is he making more money as a personal trainer?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that he is. But it's what else is he doing besides right. training, right? I mean, he's got this whole drug thing that he was working on. So is he doing the same thing, right? Kanye is not. Kanye has been slowly turning into this. I mean, if you go back and you read my site, and I had some crazy things that he did back, say, like 2013. And I would say that that's about the same time that he met Harley Pasternak. And it's been this long, slow spiral that just in 2016, like I said, he was hospitalized and then he disappeared to Japan for a little while where he was supposedly getting help. And there's just, I don't understand what Harley Pasternak is doing. Is he trying to do it to other celebrities that he controls too?
Yeah, what other celebrities is he training? training.
I mean, the list is, okay. And this is crazy. And you have to kind of go through this, but Ariana Grande.
Okay.
So Ariana Grande, she was supposed to perform at, you know, when they had the Manchester bombing, like she was performing. And she has not been the same since. And if you see pictures of her now, she's basically skeletal at this point. She's filming the movie Wicked, but she looks like she can barely stand because of how emaciated she looks. And, you know, she's had therapy, a lot of therapy, and it's just, okay, well, why is Pasternak looking for these vulnerable people? Like, she didn't start working with him until about the Manchester bombing. And then you have Lady Gaga, that's one of his clients.
Oh, really?
And she's been under the influence of lots of medications, which she's admitted to. This is not, I don't have to say alleged, she's talked about it, you know, and all these kind of things. And she had a very strange beginning to her career, which is a very, that's a whole different episode about this woman that's supposedly Lena Morgana, who people say that Lady Gaga basically took her identity.
Oh, really?
And so it was a very strange beginning to her career. Gwyneth Paltrow is a client. And of course, we know about her supplements and her products that she's selling, a lot of snake oil stuff. Kim Kardashian's a client. And Kim Kardashian, of course, is involved with Lou Taylor, who was the person that convinced Jamie Spears to put Britney Spears into a conservatorship. She tried to convince Dina Lohan to put Lindsay Lohan into a conservatorship. She's been involved in the periphery of like Amanda Bynes and getting her into a conservatorship. And so then she comes in and she offers her services. Who else? Kanye, of course. You have people like Kiernan Shipka, who basically has been kind of, I don't want to say groomed, but she has a very odd relationship with John Mayer, who's well over twice her age, and he's also a client of Harley. You have Charlie Puth, who's a singer, and he poses naked frequently, and he was somebody who had this very weird relationship with Bella Thorne, who was a former Disney actress turned kind of porn director, who is also a client of Harley's. It's just these very strange kind of people. Rihanna, of course, is a client. And Miley Cyrus, who was groomed by her parents, basically. Yeah. Who else? Eva Mendes, who basically gave up her career to be a minder for Ryan Gosling. Tobey Maguire, I mean, basically a lifetime in Hollywood. I'm trying to think of others. Mac Miller, who's dead, who used to be the boyfriend of Ariana Grande. The list goes on and on. Frank Ocean, he is basically a shill for Big Pharma, and he advertises HIV drugs all the time. Halle Berry, do you remember when Halle Berry, she got into trouble and she had the hit and run, and then all of a sudden all the trouble that she was getting into was gone when she hired on with Harley.
Really?
It's just... Jimmy Fallon, like, how does he keep a talk show with all of the grooming and the cheating and the drinking and the college student stuff? And, you know, we just saw a settlement in the suit that was brought against Horatio Sanz from a person who was underage, who was invited to these Saturday Night Live parties. And Horatio and Jimmy Fallon, best friends, and Jimmy Fallon was at these parties along with like Tina Fey and stuff. Juliette Lewis, she's a client. She, back when she was 16, she was with Brad Pitt. He was 27 years old. And then Brad Pitt was a client, and Brad Pitt has kept his beginnings in Hollywood secret, and how basically he lived with an older man who was an agent and also was, I think, on Days of Our Lives, maybe One Life to Live. And you can't find any mention of that anymore, that Brad Pitt lived in that guy's guest house for like the first 2 or 3 years that he was in Hollywood. It just kind of goes on and on. Brendan Fraser, he was really huge and then forced out and tried to make waves, and now he's coming back. And how did he come back? He hired on with Harley Pasternak.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, so he goes from basically The Mummy and all of these things and then just complained and was, you know, he says that he was sexually assaulted by the guy from the Golden Globes, and I have no doubt about that, but... You know, it's just he kind of made a bunch of waves, and then all of a sudden he didn't have a career, gets to a Harley, and the next thing you know, he's in The Whale, and he gets an Oscar. It's just, it's all of these things. Natalie Portman, I mean, think about the things that she was being forced to do when she was younger. I'm not going to remember the guy's name. He's the French guy who's been in a lot of trouble, and some of the roles that she was forced to take. Vanessa Williams. She, you know, they wanted to control her. They had the nude photo scandal. And then all of a sudden, at some point in time, she got together with Harley. It's just, you could just go on and on and on. Jennifer Hudson was with him. She got with him after one of her family members was killed. I mean, you can be very conspiracy-esque about all of these kind of things, but they're just person after person after person. Jeff Goldblum. There was all these college women that had all these creepy pictures with him where he would pose with them in really, really strange ways, and nothing ever happened. And then he basically gets rewarded with this half his age ballerina kind of thing. Mila Jovovich, everybody's convinced that she used to be some kind of spy, and she's been talking about being sexually abused in Hollywood forever. And she kind of went away, but then she got together with Harley, and then all of a sudden she has a career again. I mean, MIA is a client. If you've never looked into her, her dad was one of the rebels in Sri Lanka, like the rebel leader in Sri Lanka. Everybody's pretty sure she works for her government and the CIA. it's a strange collection of clients that all seem to have some kind of possible thing to go. Like Alessandra Ambrosio, she has this huge history with Terry Richardson, who is known for sexually assaulting his models and stuff. It's just everything. Even somebody like who seems innocuous, like Kate Upton. Well, everybody forgets that Kate Upton, you know, she had like this 2014 naked photo leak, and it was like, oh gosh, this is going to be the end of my career. She gets with Harley, and then all of a sudden she gets modeling jobs again and everything. So it's just, there's these people, okay, you play ball, we'll help you out. You don't play ball, then we're going to destroy you.
You mentioned that Ariana Grande could barely stand up.
Yeah.
Did you see the last film Anne Heche did?
The one about
the motel.
I did not. The Lifetime one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Where she's rescuing her daughter.
Right. Yeah. They're holding her up in every scene. If you watch it carefully, she's never by herself or next to a counter. She's being held up in every scene or walking with someone. Yeah.
I've looked into that whole death and everything. Obviously, I feel like the vodka bottle was just kind of planted because she had no alcohol in her system at all. Why was that there? I mean, it was just the most bizarre kind of death and the reason for it. And I've just never really understood how that all happened. And I'm sure that there's more to it, and we're probably never, ever going to know.
And then there's video of her popping up underneath the sheet on the gurney. You
know, right.
What the hell?
I know. I totally agree with you.
You mentioned Golden Globes. What about that young girl, Misty Upman, who was raped at the Golden Globes? Do you think that was Harvey Weinstein himself?
Could be. I don't know. I don't think Misty's the type, but I think the rapist is just about the power anyway. It could have been. I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, I interviewed her dad. That poor kid never had a chance. They barely searched for her body when she went off that cliff. They just left her down there, didn't care. And the way he described it, after the rape, they were high-fiving this guy in the bathroom, you know, like cheers. And you see them, all this Me Too stuff at the Golden Globes, but they don't mention that ever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Quick question about Crazy Days and Nights. A lot of times you'll put up a blind item and there's a lot of comments. Do you ever see comments that are so far off the wall that you're just pulling your hair out and saying, grr?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to try and ignore for a lot of, you know, I got into that habit early on because when I first had the site, I didn't make anybody register or anything. So it was just all anonymous and nobody knew who anybody was. And so, you know, one of the great sports in life is taking shots at me. And so I just found that, you know, I'm just kind of going to ignore that stuff. And so I don't look at the comments a lot. If I write something that I'm particularly proud of, or I see something that's got like 300 or 400 comments or something, then I'll go look and wonder why it has 300 or 400 comments. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the guesses are, crazy. A lot of them are, but the thing is that I've written a lot of crazy stuff that turns out to be, you know, 100% true. And, you know, who's to say that somebody else is crazy, at least in their mind, isn't true either. But I tend to not really read the comments because also I don't want to see, I'll sometimes go and go, oh gosh, yeah, they're way off. And then I'll kind of tweak the way I describe somebody. So that way that person doesn't get picked or chosen. Cause I try not to do the whole Ted Casablanca trick of not so-and-so unless it's something that I go, gosh, that really could, it sounds exactly like somebody else. And I want to make it clear that it's not this person. There was one that your listeners probably don't care about recently where everybody thought it was somebody on Teen Mom and it wasn't. And when I went back and read it, I go, it doesn't really even sound like that. But once it takes hold, then, and this was a particularly bad one. And when it takes hold, then everybody just kind of grabs it. And then the other problem is that There's a clearinghouse for all blind items. It's a website called AGC. It goes back to alt boards, alt message boards.
Right.
I mean, the history of it goes back to the 80s and – or 90s, sorry, 90s. And, you know, and those are just guesses, though, unless I've revealed it. But people go on TikTok and they go on Instagram and they just assume that the guess is correct. And then the way things are, they can just spread and spread and spread. And I think that that's kind of what happened to the Teen Mom thing. But at the same time, I appreciate when people go and they'll like copy paste into the Reddit subreddit threads or whatever about whatever particular topic, because there was something that came out this week. There's a class action suit that was filed against Tesla. I think yesterday, Friday, April 7th, whatever day we're, you know, the day before we're recording this. And it was about Tesla's in-car videos where, you know, they're recording you while you're driving, not just facing outwards, but also inwards, and how Tesla workers were sharing some of the more salacious videos around with each other. And I wrote a blind about it in 2021, I think, or something like that, and revealed it. And I had been talking about it since 2019 when Amber Heard had said that she was being recorded in her car by Elon because they were having a relationship. And so I wrote about it in 2019 and then wrote it in 2021. And then finally this week, everybody learned that these Tesla people were sharing videos, and then there was a class action lawsuit filed on Friday, and somebody did, well, you know, here's how it started and here's how it's going kind of thing. And it had the blind, and I had forgotten, you know, when I wrote it and stuff, but people are saving them and, you know, bringing them out when something happens that is related to the blinds. And so I really appreciate that part of it.
Yeah, keep in mind now he has access to all of our Twitter private messages going back for help since the first day he signed up to Twitter.
Yeah, and that kind of scares me because I have taken a personal interest in going after Elon Musk for years and years and years and years. And I guess maybe he's got some kind of scruples or whatever where he's not going to out people, maybe. I mean, I've had enough conversations with my friends on there that you can figure out who I am from the conversations. When I signed up for Twitter, I'm not the one who signed me up. It was a reader who just was holding it in place because at that point I wasn't sure I wanted to be on Twitter. So if they go back and they look, then they can't figure out from the initial sign up. And then I don't use it on my phone. I only use it through a computer. So I'm hopeful that, you know, obviously he can trace back some IP addresses and everything, but I hope I don't get him mad enough where he does that.
But even the communications, you know, it would make use of.
Yeah, I would assume that none of the conversations that you have on Twitter are private.
Yeah.
And I would also assume that they, much like maybe like the NSA, that he's got keywords where he has somebody go through and look at them. I mean, we're seeing his power this week when he can make it so Substack links can't be retweeted or liked. And he's made it so, who was it? It was Collider, I think, the trade publication. And they said, well, you know, Twitter wants us to pay them $1,000 a month so everybody can have the blue check mark or whatever who works for us. And we said, and they said, we're not going to pay for it. They go, pre-Elon Musk and whatever he did to the algorithm, if somebody tweeted out a link to our article, we would sometimes get 20 or 30,000 clicks over there. And now we could have somebody who has 4 million followers on their Twitter do the same thing, and we might get 5 clicks.
Yeah, I'm experiencing the same thing. Real quick, though, back to Kanye. What do you make of his comments where he said, Jay-Z, I know you have assassins pointed at my head and stuff. He was talking about the Clintons and stuff. What do you make of all that?
Well, I think, okay, going back in time, Jay-Z and Kanye obviously worked together. It was Jay-Z, you know, for the most part, you can say that broke Kanye and made him who he is. And you can go back and you can look at old videos and you see Kanye and Jay-Z working together in a studio like 20 years ago. And I think what happened, and this has a coincidental almost to what I was saying, they went on a tour together, I believe, in 2012. And everything was fine. It was a world tour. And Kanye stayed behind in London, I think, at some point. And maybe we're approaching into 2013, and this is where Kanye again started going downhill. It ties into when he started working with Hartley Pasternak, and he went off on a rant on Jay-Z because he was really upset that Jay-Z was working with Justin Timberlake and that mirrors. And he was really upset, and he said a whole bunch of really nasty things, and that kind of progressed worse over the next couple of years. And I think Kanye found himself in a lot of financial difficulty, and he started borrowing money from whoever he could, and was signing away future royalties and stuff like that. And Jay-Z started buying them up and basically could control Kanye's life because he owned a bunch of this stuff. Kim Kardashian owns a bunch of Kanye's stuff. The Yeezy stuff was never 50-50 with Adidas. It was Kim Kardashian has a whole bunch of it. Like, Kanye had needed money, and so he goes to Kim, and she's a smart business person and buys that kind of stuff and the future royalties that that Jay-Z didn't own. And at some point, Jay-Z, I've written about it before, and I'm actually in the middle of a huge deep dive on the podcast about Jay-Z, but Jay-Z has always said that prior to, subsequent to his shooting of his brother when he was 12, that he has never fired a gun since, or never hit anybody. He says he's never fired a gun, never shot anybody, but he has shot at people but missed since the age of 12. And then there was a stabbing back in 1999 maybe or something like that. But other than that, he's kind of stayed away from any kind of violence. But there is a story that goes around that that perhaps there was somebody who was going to cause him trouble and that he had that person taken out. I've never been able to prove it. I doubt I would ever be able to prove it. But, I mean, that was like this buzz that was going around. And Foxy Brown, who has this very contentious relationship with Jay-Z because she says that he was like 30 and she was 15 when, she was like a sophomore in high school or something, and that she has also accused him of a lot of things, but she has so much over him that he just writes her a check basically once a year. But then when Kanye started talking about Jay-Z and started to threaten things, that Jay-Z tried to have Kanye killed. I don't know if it was Jay-Z who tried to have Kanye killed, but somebody definitely tried to kill Kanye. And it was after he had been saying things about Jay-Z. So I totally believe Kanye when he believes that Jay-Z tried to have him killed.
And what do you make of when he talks about the Clintons and his whole relationship with Trump back and forth?
I think a lot of it is him trying to get a reaction out of people. I also think that he's just been so screwed up by medications and everything like that, that he has been just messed up entirely. And the same thing could be said for, say, like Britney Spears. She doesn't go off on the whole political thing, but I don't think that she's been the same since 2007. And even though she's not in a technical conservatorship right now, I would say that all of the drugs and everything that she's had to do that have gone on with her have messed her up. And then we go back and we look, and she was a client of Harley's and Lou Taylor, and it's just this constant history. And then you look at somebody like Amanda Bynes, who it's the same kind of thing. But I think sometimes it just kind of goes too far. And a lot of times, even with MK Ultra, not everybody ended up a childlike mess, but they would try something new or they would do some other kind of medication and it ends up screwing you up. And I think that Kanye realizes that he's a pariah at this point and that he needs to try and make amends. And the best way for him to do it is just to stay quiet, which he did for a while. And then he did the whole Jonah Hill and 21 Jump Street thing recently, which made absolutely no sense, but is maybe Kanye's way of trying to apologize. And I mean, the average person has a very high tolerance for forgiveness in this country and around the world. I mean, we look at Chris Brown, he sells out concerts, even though he's a serial woman beater. And that, several women have been sexually assaulted at his house. R. Kelly gets thousands of dollars per month, every single month, sent to him in prison. I have no doubts that if R. Kelly was released from jail, that he could go sell out 5,000 seats in many, many cities across the country. It just, we like people. Look at Tom Cruise, right? I mean, he's arguably the number one, number two movie star on the planet. And honestly, he should be canceled. But we just tend to ignore what we want to ignore. And we tend to believe the best in everybody, even with, you know, presented with, with facts that say otherwise.
And also, too, they only have these PR companies who can kind of, you know, manipulate their appearance and evoke sympathy and all kind of and cover things up.
I think it goes back, you know, we're both old enough that, and I've mentioned this before, that, you know, People magazine started off as a column in Time, right? And it was news. It was, you know, Time reporters who were journalists, and they would write actual news. And People magazine and stuff, they actually wrote news until about, I don't know, 15 years ago it started to really kind of change, where they became kind of just flacks for PR. And then you have this whole blogging kind of atmosphere and people doing it on their own and stuff and hustling and websites and stuff. And they want access, right? Because they're nothing without access. And if you go in and you say something about Tom Cruise, you're not going to be invited to a premiere. You're not going to be invited to a red carpet where you can get a blurb or a quote for your video blog or on YouTube channel or TikTok or anything like that. And they're so desperate to be invited to whatever that they just say, well, I'm just going to ignore all of this because it's more important to me to have them on the show. You know, if you have Tom Cruise on Jimmy Fallon, is he going to actually ask him a question related to Scientology? No, he is not. And it's because then people go, well, is he going to ask a tough question of me? And so why would I want to go on that show? It's, and you see, like, celebrities, like Howard Stern used to never be able to get anybody. And the people who went on were really, really brave, because they knew that he was going to ask them every kind of personal question imaginable. And then at some point over time, in the last 10 years, celebrities are not afraid to go on there anymore, because he doesn't care, right? He's not going to go ask these controversial questions that he used to. And again, because he wants access, he wants the easy thing of having some celebrity come in that he can kiss their butt for an hour and a half, because it makes the radio show easier. You know, I guarantee you that when you do a podcast, when you're doing it by yourself, it's much harder than when I come on and talk for half the time. You know, it's just, I know it. I enjoy when I have a guest on my show, because then it makes it much, much easier for me. And the way to do that is to, you know, I'm not going to go on Twitter and say bad things about Ed Opperman. Not that I would anyway, but because, okay, I want to come on your show. I want you to have on mine or whatever. So it's the same kind of thing. And I just, until somebody decides that they want to say something negative about a celebrity, then we're just going to have this constant, you know, reaffirmation. And, you know, it's just, it's really bad. We're not going to have another Wendy Williams who's going to go on the air in New York City and tell everybody that she has a sex tape that she's watched of Sean Combs having sex with another guy. It's never going to happen again.
Yeah, they really did a job on her, man.
They did. She, Wendy Williams was just somebody that I think she's one of my favorite people of all time, because she just didn't care. She just wanted to tell the truth. And look what happened to her. Look what has happened to her because she wanted to tell the truth.
Yeah, but they took away access to her own bank accounts, right?
Just, I know.
It's just,
I know.
Aaron Carter, the death of Aaron Carter, they're claiming that right before he died, his last communication was to Kanye West. Did you make anything out of that?
I mean, it was several days before, if I recall. I mean, the whole Aaron Carter thing, I did an episode the day he died, I think. And, you know, I've done a couple since. I think that his mom, you know, they had the whole conspiracy theory where he was murdered. I don't believe that. I think that it's interesting who gave him the drugs and stuff like that, but I don't think he was murdered at all. I think that there's nothing to be said about the Kanye thing. I think it was just, it happened to be the last tweet that he sent out. the guy was killing himself. He should have probably died several times. And I'm never going to get behind the Aaron Carter being murdered thing, because I can't figure out why he would be murdered.
What, recently there was this Don Bass lawsuit, and they got some video of this joint. It looks a mess.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. So.
Like, they just gave like a teaching accreditation and opened up a school?
Yeah, I mean, I don't – the whole Don thing is just like here's what I think with Donda is that the whole – I didn't know about the second floor thing until I didn't know that he was afraid to go upstairs. My thing about Donda Academy is it feels very Will Smith-like. And I think he wanted – you know, Will Smith had this school that he ran, and I don't think it's still open anymore. Maybe it is. That he opened, and basically all of the tenets of the school were Scientology. And, you know, you take everything from Scientology and you put it into a school curriculum. And I think for some reason that Kanye thought that that would be a good idea, to have a school where he could tell everybody's thoughts. Like, he tried to do it in Wyoming with the choir that he kept there and having classes and stuff. I think that he thought that he had a lot of knowledge to impart to the world, and that the best way to do that is to have a school. And I also think, much like his choir in Wyoming, is that he was looking for talent that he could exploit. So let's say he has these kids in school, and, you know, the tuition was such that he is going to have not only students that, you know, are academically maybe gifted, but their parents are probably wealthy. So then he has access to wealthy parents who at least are willing to give this guy money. So, hey, they're giving me money for the school. Maybe they'll give me money for something else. Then, you know, a lot of parents are going to send their kids there because they're talented artistically. And they think, okay, well, if they're with Kanye, then they're going to have a chance for a recording career and stuff. And then Kanye can take advantage of them and say, oh, you know, you're really good. I'm going to assign you to this record label, but I'm going to be your manager and I'm going to take 60%. Or, you know, 40%, and then, oh, I'm going to advance you some label money and stuff, and you can pay it back. I just think he wanted to control the process. And there's plenty of choir members from the thing in Wyoming where he was, you know, stealing stuff and samples and things that they had written. And I just think that that's what he wanted to do with the school also. Not just impart his knowledge, but also find talent that he could exploit for free.
Yeah, that goes on like crazy, especially in the rap. Producers, you know, signing these kids up to these crazy deals. Something I've experienced with guests of the show here is either after they've been a guest or I'm trying to book them, but they've got some kind of production deal and they've signed this NDA. They're not allowed to talk about it. It's right around the corner. And I'm starting to suspect, okay, that this is just being paid to be silent. You know, not knowingly, they think there's a big movie deal right around the corner. Okay? Have you... Am I crazy?
Yeah. No, you're not crazy. I think that, you know, a way to get people – there's always – okay, Hollywood is always wanting to control you. When you go to, say, an audition, right, you're going to a casting call and maybe you're down to the final 10, right, the final 10 for a role. They will give you the contract, okay? They will give you this contract that you're about to sign, and it'll be on there, and the numbers are eye-popping. Let's say it's for Modern Family before it started or whatever. So it's a network sitcom when they were still giving good deals. This is pre, like, streaming and all this kind of stuff. And it'll say something like $25,000 an episode, guarantee 26 episodes. And some actors going, oh my goodness, wow, I made $25,000 last year. And they start getting stars in their eyes and all this kind of stuff. And they sign this contract, which is done before you can be cast. But remember, you're only one of the final 10. There's no guarantee. But what they do is they keep you with that contract that you signed. They keep you on hold. And so you can't go do anything else until they make that final decision. So you could be on hold for months and months and months. And they do that just to, like, oh, we're not sure we're going to cast this person, but now, you know, maybe we will, but we want to control them. And everything's about control. anything. It's the record deals and stuff where, oh, yeah, here's an advance for $300,000. Oh, great. Fantastic. So I get to keep this $300,000. Well, no, you don't get to keep the $300,000. It's for your recordings and stuff. And, oh, okay. So, okay, great. And do I get, I'm going to use that to pay for the recordings. And so it's mine. Well, no, you got to pay it back. Oh, okay. Well, how do I pay it back? Well, everything that you do, we're going to take our money first. So, we're going to take your merch. We're going to, you know, take money from your touring and stuff. I mean, it's a 360 deal is what they call it. We're going to take money from you from everywhere and you're going to pay it back. And it's going to, we're going to charge interest on it. And there's other things we're going to advance you. And maybe your next record deal, you'll actually make some money or something. It's all about control. In recording contracts, you can sign them for up to 7 years. That is a long time to keep somebody under your control, 7 years. And then they'll take your royalties, and they own the publishing and stuff, and they'll keep that. And so you really have nothing left to show. You are just a cog in this machine. And it takes somebody who makes it very, very, very big to be able to break the contract and then to continue to have success. You'll see it sometimes with like the boy bands like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC. They managed to get out of those early contracts and sign better ones, but only because they were so, so big. Somebody like even like Taylor Swift, you can see all the struggles that she's had, and she arguably made it extremely big, maybe the biggest star that, you know, singer ever. And she still couldn't get her stuff that she created. And it's because of that initial contract that she signed.
Yeah, even worse, the modeling agencies where they take these kids and they stack them up in these studio apartments in bunk beds, like four to a studio. And then they're charging them for FedEx and limousines and all this other stuff coming out of their modeling paychecks. And then they're making nothing.
Yeah, they make absolutely nothing. And then a lot of these models, gosh, I can never remember the name of this documentary, but it's really good. And it's about a model scout, and she used to be a model. And she, you know, she goes to Russia and stuff, and she finds models and these competitions, and there'll be like 200 or 300 of them. And they don't really they don't speak English. They only speak Russian. And they'll be like 13 or 14 years old, and she'll find them, and then she'll send them off to Japan. And, you know, so they can go model there because Japan likes this young, blonde kind of look, childlike kind of thing. And they put them in the same kind of thing, like these apartments with 7 or 8 exactly like. And then they ship them out to all these modeling assignments. And I use modeling a lot in quotes there because it's just another way to, you know, to traffic these girls, and they can't say anything and they can't complain to anybody because they only speak Russian. And if they call home, their calls are monitored and stuff like that. And then, you know, the family's making more money though than they've ever made before. So they're loath to say anything. And then, you know, 2 or 3 years later, these models are all done and used up and they're sent back to home, scarred forever or whatever.
It's similar to the whole Andrew Tate business model.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Andrew Tate, same kind of thing, right? He was in Romania and doing the same kind of thing. You know, you go to a poor Eastern European country and where people are desperate for money and they're willing to do anything. And, you know, some of the – I'm trying to remember. There was another document. I've watched so many documentaries lately, but there's one about – the adult entertainment industry, but in Eastern Europe, and just how much more violent it is compared to the films that are made in the West, like in the U.S. or something like that, that they're brutal, and the things that the adult actresses are forced to do are horrible, but, you know, they want the money. And they often don't know what they're getting into when they sign these contracts and go to these film sets.
Yeah, when there was that whole indictment way back with the Russian collusion stuff and how there was Russian bot farms and this guy from Staten Island controlled all these porn websites, and I went looking into this guy and rape.com, you know, like really as serious and evil as you can get. And there was this one whole thing where they would kill the girl in the room and put her in a suitcase and carry her on a suitcase. That was every film. just insane, man. But speaking of Andrew Tate and this kind of what do you make of the whole Corey Feldman, Charlie Sheen allegations?
Okay.
Or other Corey
Feldman to me is a grifter. Okay. Plain and simple, I think he's a grifter. I think that that with the Charlie Sheen thing, that do I think that Charlie Sheen is horrible? Yeah, I do. Do I think that Charlie Sheen molested Corey Feldman? I'm not sure. I would tend to say no. Do I think that Corey Feldman was molested by men? Absolutely. Do I think that Corey Haim was molested and, you know, taken advantage of? Absolutely. But I think that Corey, and this is my opinion, I think that he took some payouts and payoffs from people to stay quiet. And the names that he was giving up were names that were not going to get him in trouble because they'd already been accused by others and found guilty or they're dead. And, you know, he's never said any names other than, say, like Charlie Sheen, of names that, you know, we didn't already know about. And yeah, but I think, you know, if you look at Corey Haim and what he went through prior to his death, it's this thing where parents see all this money that their kids are making and they cease being parents and they just see the dollar signs. And Corey Haim, you know, he was Hollywood young age, 15, 16 years old, and he would go out to, you know, the Oakwood, which is in Burbank, and over by Warner Brothers, and a lot of people stay there when they move to Hollywood. It's like an extended stay hotel. And, you know, it would go party with people until all hours of the night at 15 and 16 years old, and bad things happened to him. Somebody asked me in a recent Q&A about whether or not Macaulay Culkin would ever talk about Michael Jackson. And I've come to the conclusion that I think that Michael Jackson focused all of his tendencies for young boys to be people that were not famous. And I do that because Corey Feldman is a grifter. And if Michael Jackson had molested Corey Feldman, I think that he would have already sold that story and told that story for however many millions of dollars he could.
Well, you know, I had some dealings with that whole bunch, and people can go back in the archives and look up Corey Feldman Angels and all these different, you know, I've been involved with that bunch. And I could tell you, you know, there was a lot of, okay, we got to get back to you. We got to go get permission. there was a lot of talking to someone that made a payoff. They had to go get permission before they can come back and talk about certain things. A lot of control, a lot of weird stuff, man, but definitely more payoffs, yeah.
Yeah, with the Angels, though, what I recall is that, like, he tried to take them on tour with his failed singing career, and he wasn't paying them.
Starving them.
Yeah, and, you know, it's another example of, okay, there is somebody beneath me on this chain that I can exploit. And that's, to me, Hollywood bottom line, it's just all about exploiting people for as much as you can, and it is no different. Everybody says Hollywood's accessible. Agree, 100%. It's about exploiting, and there's no difference between Hollywood as an entertainment industry and, say, Amazon, who basically also wants to exploit people that are beneath them on the food chain and drive other competitors out of business and take advantage and beat up the mom and pops for the bottom line. It's the same kind of thing. It's just, you know, we don't necessarily always equate big business to as a cesspool like we do with Hollywood. Just because Hollywood's front and center in our face all the time, rather than big business necessarily.
Yeah, the old company towns, the old coal mining towns, where you get your paycheck and you have to buy from the company store.
Right, and now the Fed's gonna do this digital currency thing, which is going to be horrible. And, you know, Facebook has explored doing a digital currency where they were going to do a company town kind of thing, where they were going to pay their employees in this, and then they were going to have apartments and stuff that you could just, you know, it would just come out of your paycheck and stuff, where basically it was going to be a new version of a company town. And, I mean, that's I think, what everybody wants. And, you know, this is the conspiracy part in me, but I think that big business was involved in the crushing of crypto because of the fact that there were so many people during the pandemic that they used the stimmy money to buy crypto, and they made a lot of money, and they didn't have to go back to the office. They didn't have to go back and work. They could just be digital nomads. They didn't ever have to work again. But when you crush crypto, and then all these people are forced to go get jobs. The same thing with TikTok. The only reason TikTok is in any danger of being banned is because it's putting out of business people like Snapchat and Meta. And they, first of all, they want that algorithm because it's the only algorithm that actually works. And 80% of the advertising money goes to TikTok rather than the other ones. And when you have all these TikTok people, think about how many people make a living, a decent enough living, where they are on TikTok and they just do it like that. And all of a sudden you take TikTok away. None of these people are going to have livelihoods, and they're going to have to go back and work or for somebody else and go back into a cubicle and fill up some of that commercial real estate that is dying on the vine.
Yeah, I don't think we can ever turn back the clock on a lot of that stuff with OnlyFans now and Uber and Uber Eats. And all, people can do these gigs. Why work at the drive thru at McDonald's and argue with someone over their cheese?
Right, but these Uber people, the ones like the Uber people, yeah. What it's doing, this is the great thing, is that some of these Uber people, they make a lot of money also being on TikTok, right? They're like, follow me as I try and make $100 a day. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, you're really working hard for that $100 a day. But it also shows how hard it is, even with Uber, where I'm going to have to work 7-8 hours or whatever to make the $100, but they're still not actually working for anybody, right? They're working for themselves, and that's a whole lot better. Oh, you know, I got to go pick up my kid from school. You know what? It's great. I can just decline. I can just turn off the app for an hour and go do that, rather than having to ask somebody in HR giving me a really hard time about having to go pick up my kid because they're sick at school.
You know what? We're already out of time. I was going to ask about the stabbing of the Cash App guy. Any suspicions there?
I find it very odd that the day that the Cash App, the next day after the Cash App guy was murdered, is when the Fed announced that they're going to have a digital currency called Fed App or Fed Cash App or something like that. I found that weird. I found the fact that it was 2:30 in the morning and he's walking around in San Francisco odd. I think that that is a death that I'm going to need a lot more detail and explanation on and a lot more answers.
Yeah, really quick. And people say, well, that's going to stop them. You know, put a stop to, you know, killing him doesn't put a stop to Cash App. It's still going to run. Yeah, but he could have held a press conference. There could be something he knows he was going to say.
Well, here's the other thing. If you want to go conspiracy, and we can go deep dark on this, is that, you know, during the pandemic, he worked with the World Health Organization.
Okay.
And, you know, there was some talk that, you know, he was – and he worked on the first vaccines and stuff, and that he learned something that he didn't like and was going to talk about it. So if you guys want to go down that conspiracy road, he did actually work with the WHO. It's there for everybody to see. And he did work on the first trials of vaccines and stuff with the WHO. So you never know.
NT Lawyer, you could find him at Crazy Days and Nights on his website. That's where he does the blind items and the little stuff. But then also on his Patreon. The Patreon is called NT Lawyer. Okay, and you go there. That's where the podcast is. How often do you put up new content on the podcast?
Almost every day.
Almost every day. The guy's very busy. Mr. NT Lawyer, listen, thank you so much, man. I appreciate our conversation off the air and on the air. Anything you got, man, give me a call. I'd love to put you back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ed. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Good night.